Back my during my first year of podcasting, I recorded a segment about how I was almost the victim of a scam, the fake check scam. Well, a couple years later, and I was almost the victim again, this time a bit older and wiser. Let's talk about the fake check scam. Good afternoon. Once again, this is Gene Task, your host of my White Collar Crime and Fraud podcast. I'd like to welcome you. Hope everybody's having a good summer. Some time ago, I think it was actually during the first season, I had recorded an episode where I talked about how I was almost the victim of a scam. And I want to talk about that again because, as luck would have it, I was almost the victim of a scam again. And this is the fake check scam. It's the scam is out there, and it's particularly, I wouldn't say bad, but these scammers tend to target attorneys for reasons I talked about in the first podcast, and I'm going to repeat again. But if anything, these fake check scams have become more prevalent, which is why I'm talking about it now, aside from the personal involvement. And also, I want to give some ideas about how to spot these things. I just find them to be an annoyance, but they really can affect someone, and they can really affect an attorney's career, especially if the attorney finds out he owes money to a bank. So let me talk about how this scam was introduced to me, or rather how I once again was sent a fake check scam information, or I guess you might say a hook, and what to look out for. And although this episode is geared towards attorneys, of course, it's open for everybody. The fake check scam does not just affect attorneys. It affects lots of other people. But this one was targeted towards attorneys. But I think anybody listening to this podcast will realize how it can blend into other types of scams. Anyway, like all attorneys, I'm always looking for business. It's always good to have new clients out there, especially as the old joke goes, clients who can pay. So I get an email from an individual who purports to be owning a large oil well concern in another state and asked me if I handle contract reviews, which I do. So, of course, it's not unusual for an attorney to get cold emails. That is to say, emails from prospective clients. I have a pretty good website. I get web traffic, of course, and emails from that traffic. But this is a little bit unusual in that it was directed towards my direct email address. It didn't come from my website, but once again, these things happen, so that didn't stand up in and of itself. So I responded and said, yes, I handle contract reviews. And about a day later, I get back an email saying, well, we want to retain your firm. And this is the name of the company. We're getting a contract from this other company. And so we want you to review it and send us your contract, and we'll send you a check for your retainer. Now, of course, this is always good news when you quote a fee and the fee is accepted and the person invites you to send a contract. But a couple things started to grab my attention, let's put it that way, as to why I thought there might be something here that didn't quite make sense. And so I started off reviewing the first email that was sent. And it was sent from a Gmail account. Now, that's not a red flag per se, but if you're going to be sending me emails from, in this case, what purports to be a large oil field concern, I would expect you would use your own business email address. For example, my business email address is gene@tausklawfirm.com. I have a Yahoo account that I use as a backup for my business emails, but unless my email account is down or else there's something wrong with it, I will use my email address of gene@tasklawfirm.com, just like any attorney would. And nowadays, I mean, you don't even need really a website. You can have your own law firm as your email. You can get that for extremely inexpensively. So that's the first indication that something's up. I'm getting an email from someone who reports to be the president of this oil field concern, but it's from a Gmail account. But as I said, that's not in and of itself strange. It just raised my eyebrows a little bit. So the second thing is, just out of curiosity, and I probably spent a lot more time on this than I should have, but then again, it does make for a pretty decent podcast episode, so I can't complain too much. I looked at the email itself, and in the email, it said, this is the opposing party, so you can run a conflicts check. A conflicts check is pretty much necessary for any attorney. You want to make sure that the party you're representing, the opposing party, was never a client of yours or is not a client of yours now in the past. That would create a conflict of interest, and attorneys cannot have conflicts of interest. So that was important, of course, and under normal circumstances, actually under any circumstances, I would be glad they sent me the name of the opposing party. But I noticed this time that the email that was sent to me concerning asking me to send a contract came from this oil field concern's alleged email address. So let's just say the address from the oil field, email address from the oil field was steve@oilfieldconcerns.com instead of steve@gmail.com. So, of course, that raises an eyebrow as well. Why now am I getting an email from a oil field, from what seems to be an actual email address from a company when before it was from a Gmail address? Okay. But once again, it just raises an eyebrow. It's not really the proverbial smoking gun. But I went back and now I looked at the website where this oil field concern was. And they did provide me with a website, and of course I looked into it. Now, looking at the website itself, it did start to raise my eyebrows once again. A couple reasons. First of all, the pictures of the oil field concern seemed to be generic pictures. That is to say, you can easily find millions, if not hundreds of millions of pictures of oil fields in the world on the web. That's easy. And these pictures just seemed a bit too generic. I'm not an oil field worker, of course. I have done a lot of work for oil companies, mainly obtaining visas for personnel. But there was something about these pictures that just seemed a little bit too generic. That is to say, they weren't anything that really seemed to be focused on one particular oil field company. Second, this website was broken down into several parts. One of the parts, for example, had listed its officers. So I clicked on the part that said officers, and there were a couple names. There were officers, you know, Mr. X president, Mr. Y vice president, Mr. Z treasurer, you know, Mr. XX CEO, et cetera, et cetera. And I was looking down this, and first, what really grabbed my attention was there were no pictures associated with these supposed officers of the company. Well, once again, that it's not unusual per se. Let me back up for a minute. That is unusual. In today's day and age, people generally like to know who they're doing business with. And because of modern communications and the World Wide Web, there's no excuse not to know who you're doing business with. So yeah, that did start to raise more than a few red flags. And next, as I looked into one of the parts of the website, said, do you want to have a career with us? And I clicked into that and it just said, you know, interested in having a career with us, call this number. Okay, well, now all these red flags are starting to add up. I did call the number from that they offered on the website, and I called them. And what was interesting was that, first of all, it didn't seem to be a number in the U.S. I heard a lot of noises that are normally associated with when I make long-distance phone calls, either through WhatsApp or some other type of program or some other type of app that allows me to make long-distance phone calls for free. I'm sure everybody's used them. And somebody answered on the phone. They answered with the name of this oil company. And I said, hi, I'd like to speak to the president. Oh, he's not available right now. Oh, well, this person had sent me an email. So I was just curious to talk to him. I'm getting ready to send him my my contract and got back. But the answer, the next question was, are you a lawyer? I'm like, yes, I'm a lawyer. Oh, well, we deal with a lot of law firms. So can you please give me your name and number and I will give this to the person. So I did. And that was the end of it. And I called back again, this time as a prospective client. And I called from a different number, obviously. But this time the result was, well, we'll get back to you on this. Now, that, of course, seemed very odd as well. Why would certainly any oil field, any company, when a prospective client calls and wants to do business, that normally means that you will take direct, immediate action. There's no organization or business I'm aware of, though, when somebody's offering you to give them money, we'll say, oh, we'll get back to you. Normally it's, let's, how can we help you? So all these factors added up and began to look a bit strange. The next thing was I did a search on the website and a lot of red flags came up, which said this website is unsafe. Now we're getting into some very dangerous territory. If the website appears unsafe, why is that? If this is supposedly an oil field concern, you would expect that they would have web designers that knew what they were doing. They would have web hosters that would knew what they were doing. And the website would be considered safe. Why am I getting all these red flags now from various programs and apps I have on my computer to spot dangerous websites so I don't get viruses downloaded? Why am I getting all these red flags? So by this point in time, I'm pretty well convinced this is not, this company does not want to hire me, which is unfortunate, of course, why I always like to have new business. But as I said, the red flags are starting to add up. And finally, I took the step of the icing on the cake. That is to say, the if you remember, I said that the when they sent me the email, they said that look for this conflicts checked. And this oil company was listed actually in Fort Worth, Texas. So I called this oil company and spoke to a representative. And I was able to contact the right person and said, look, are you doing business with this oil field concern? And they said, no, we've never heard of it. And I introduced myself. I said, well, you know, my name is Gene Tausk. I'm an attorney. I'm a certified fraud examiner. I also do a podcast on fraud, and I think this is a fraudulent website. And this is just what we call part of a fake check scam, and I wanted to alert you to it. And they thanked me. But by this point, of course, I knew the answer. This was a scam, and I was more convinced than ever this is a fake check scam. So it took me more time than I really needed or time that I really had to investigate this. But as I said, it is for a good purpose. It is to investigate for my web, for my podcast, and also to talk about once again how I am almost the victim of a fraud, in this case, the fake check scam. Now, what would have happened had I gone through with this scam? What would have happened? Now, assuming this was a fake check scam, and I'm pretty sure that it was, let's go down and talk about how a fake check scam works. And fake check scams work and how this would have affected me and why it's directed towards lawyers. I would have sent a contract to this individual, to this company, and they would have signed the contract and I would have quoted my fee for a retainer and they would have sent back my retainer fee. Now, let's just say for the sake of argument, my retainer fee was $150,000. Ha. Huh. But one can always dream, right? But let's say it was $150,000. Normally in the fake check scams, what happens is you will get a check and the check is a very, very good check. And it's a fake check, of course, but it doesn't look like something that was run off on some fly-by-night copier. It looks very, very real. For all intents and purposes, it is real. And normally what happens in the fake check scam is that they will send you, remember I quoted, let's say I quoted a fee of $150,000. They would have sent me, say, $200,000. So I would have gotten a check for $200,000. And now, normally as an attorney, I would email them back and say, hey, you know, you sent me the wrong amount. I'm going to send you back the check. Do you want me to destroy it? Whatever. As attorneys, we're upheld to a higher standard where if somebody sends us the wrong amount of money, and especially if it's too much money, we have to notify the client and say, hey, you sent me too much money. And the reason being, of course, is that certainly the State Bar of Texas rules require that we alert our clients if there's this sort of thing happens. I mean, mistakes happen, but we need to alert our clients, even our new clients, of this, what happens. Now, normally in a fake check scam, what happens is I get back an email which says, oh, we're sorry, please excuse us. Go ahead and deposit it anyway, because although you quoted us a fee of $150,000, we don't know, and you don't know how much work will actually be put into this. You may put in more than $150,000 worth of work. And you can give it back to us at the end, and that's fine. So I would have deposited the check. And keep in mind, the bank will accept the check, unless it's something which is obviously phony, which in these fake check scams is not the case. But unless it is obviously phony, The bank accepts the check and deposits it. Now, remember what I said. These checks are extraordinarily well made. The technology that's used to make these checks is first generation. Now, scratch, that's the wrong term. The most recent generation of copiers and digital imprint technology to make the check look all but real. And the bank is under, if the bank believes it's a real check and the bank has no reason to doubt that it's not a real check, they will deposit the money. And the check will clear. Now, under most laws, including federal laws, the banks must make these monies available as quickly as reasonably possible. But just because you can withdraw the money, that doesn't mean that the check is good. And that, of course, is what the fake check scammer is counting on. So I would have deposited the money. In this case, the money for an attorney, and this is where it gets specific to attorneys. As attorneys, we when we ask for a retainer, the retainer is deposited in what we call the IOLTA account. The IOLTA account is a trust account. Now, here in Texas, the monies are placed in this IOLTA account, and the State Bar of Texas every month collects the interest from these IOLTA accounts and applies it to a fund that's used for individuals that cannot afford an attorney. And as attorneys, we are required, if we're not going to use these funds immediately, or if the funds are not for a flat fee, or if we haven't earned the money, these funds have to go into an IOLTA account. It's required by the bylaws of our profession. I think it's required in all 50 states, but certainly it's required here in the state of Texas, and the attorneys who are members of the Texas Bar, which means every attorney who practices in Texas, has to follow this requirement that the money will be placed in an IOLTA account and it's kept there. Now, the way it goes is as I bill against that retainer, I'm allowed to withdraw money from my IOLTA account. I do it on a monthly basis. Most attorneys I know do it on a monthly basis. But as we bill this money, we're allowed to acquire this money. So let's say it had been a real situation and the $200,000 was in my account. And let's say the first month I did $20,000 worth of work. I'm allowed to withdraw $20,000 from that account and apply it towards my business account. My business is an operating account, just like every attorney I know has both an IOLTA account and a business account, an operating account. So the money will be placed in my operating account. And from there, I can write checks to myself. I can pay myself. I can pay third parties. I can pay my staff, what have you. And this is what the scammer is counting on. This is what the fake check scammer is counting on. So the money goes into my IOLTA account, and then it clears in a relatively small amount of time. Now, once again, this is specific towards attorneys, what I'm going to talk about next. Normally, as part of these fake check scams, the scammer then writes me back and says, oh, you know, I'm sorry. We did say that to keep the extra $50,000, we were mistaken. We actually need the $50,000 now. We are requesting that you please refund us the $50,000 immediately. We need the money immediately. Now, once again, as attorneys, I am required to refund that client's money. I'm required to refund it for a number of reasons. First of all, I hadn't earned that money. Remember what I said. If the check had just been deposited, I probably would have just gotten started on the project, assuming there's anything to start on. But in any case, the money's in the account, and normally 2 to 3 days after the money is in the account, in my IOLTA account, the scammer is calling me, demanding that I send the money back. Now, once again, according to the rules of the profession, the rules of the State Bar of Texas, I have to send him back the money because I have not earned it. And any attorney knows, or any attorney here in Texas should know, that if I don't return promptly the unearned fees to a client, I can get into trouble with the state bar. A grievance can be filed against me saying, why did you keep this money? And I'd have to answer the grievance. And it creates a nasty situation, at least for the attorney. So as an attorney, I would be bound to write the check, write $50,000 check to the fake scam artist. Now, normally I would think, or normally any attorney would think, well, this isn't a problem. He wants $50,000 back. He wrote me a check for $150,000. So I'm going to send him $50,000 back and no problem. Now, those of you who have listened to my first podcast concerning this subject, and even if you haven't, you know where this is going. After usually 2 weeks max, I suddenly get a note from the bank saying, well, this check is baseless. It's a fake check. So you know, we're not honoring this check. We're going to reduce your account by $200,000 because there's nothing there to begin with. Now, if they had sent me the check and not asked for their money back, and then the $200,000 disappeared, that would not be a problem. It's money that was never used, so no harm, no foul. But that's not the situation now, is it? The situation is that I had just sent them back $50,000 and I'm now short $50,000. So when the bank takes away $200,000, $50,000 of that was my money. But wait, it gets even worse. That $50,000 was not my money. Remember, I said I would have deposited that in my IOLTA account, which means it's not my money, it's my client's money. Remember, the IOLTA account is a trust account for that attorneys are required to have for their clients. So the money is sitting there in my IOLTA account. And so the $50,000 that I wrote to this person, I would have written to this person, did not come from my funds. It came from the unused portion of the funds from my client. So now as an attorney, I've got real problems. Not only am I out $50,000, which has gone to the scammer, but even worse, that $50,000 I wrote, I would have written from funds that don't belong to me. They belong to my clients. Now, at this point, I've got to, according to the rules of the State Bar of Texas, I've got to bring that IOLTA account up to date because I had just written a bad check, which means that I would have to take $50,000 from my own account, personal or professional, whatever, and deposit that money in there so my clients' funds are available should my clients ask for those funds back. So you can see where this really creates a lot of problems for attorneys. Just given that example I just gave, had I fallen for this scam and they had asked for $50,000 and I sent it back, that's $50,000 I would have had to put back in that IOLTA account. Now, the bank itself, is the bank responsible? Well, there are a lot of lawsuits that fly back and forth on this, but right now, the way the law is written, the answer is no, because I'm responsible for this. And even, let's say, even if I'm not responsible, even if I can get the bank to pay, I still would have to get that money back in my IOLTA account as fast as possible. And that money has to come from somewhere. And if the bank wants to fight me on it, then I have to fight the bank. But in the meantime, that money has to come from somewhere, and it has to come from the attorney. It has to come from his own operating account or from his own personal funds, one or the other, whatever. But that money's got to be placed back in there. And this is what the scammer is counting on, that he or she knows that the attorney has a special obligation to return these unused funds to them as fast as possible, and then is left literally holding the bag. And so the fake check scam can be really devastating to attorneys, especially for small law firms. Although I have heard that large law firms have had trouble with this as well and have fallen for it, but generally larger law firms have greater cash reserves to fall back on. So what, as they say, is the moral of the story, other than, once again, caveat emptor, buyer beware? First of all, let's review how I looked into this. Now, keep in mind, I've been doing fraud investigations, fraud defense for quite some time, so I'm very familiar with all these. Now, I guess I am tooting my own horn, but I am saying that I've got a lot of experience in dealing with fraud, so I know what to look for. But there's a couple things that anybody should look for when something like this happens. And keep in mind, the fake check scam is not solely directed at attorneys. Attorneys are a target for the reasons I've gone over in this podcast, but they're not the only target, not by a long shot. Let's say you have a small company. The same thing can happen to a small company. If somebody has repairs air conditioners, and another company wants to buy air conditioner, get the person to repair air conditioners. So they send them a check. The check is over the amount they promised, and so they want the money back. Well, once again, the air conditioning company would have to pay for it. And the air conditioning company, of course, is just an example. But keep in mind the following. First of all, I'm sure you've heard that old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So let's say that you get this. Remember how the fake check scam works. The person gets a check in excess of the amount requested. So in this case, if I had requested $150,000, let's say they would have sent me a check for $200,000. That is the first red flag. For most people, you know, an extra $50,000 is quite a bit of money. So right away, that raises some alarm bells. But even if it's $5,000, it still should relay some alarm bells. So the first step, obviously, is if you get a check, which is more than the amount, if a company gets a check, which is more than the amount, the wise solution, of course, is to rip it up and say, hey, look, sorry, you sent me the wrong check. I ripped it up, shredded it. So just send me a new check and we'll get started. That right there would save a lot of problems because it stops the fake check scam in its tracks. So that's something to keep in mind. Just remember, if something is too good to be true, well, it probably is. Second, normally, you know, in the terms of business, if somebody wants to retain somebody, well, they should be able to answer questions, any questions. So remember what I said, I'd called that place and yes, they answered the phone and yes, they answered my questions, but there was something odd about it. Trust your instincts sometimes. Now, in this case, as I said, my instinct told me that this call I was making, supposedly it was going to an oil field company here in the United States, but it wasn't. I could tell just because of all the long distance calls and international calls I make that it was going overseas. Why would that happen? Why would this call be going overseas? Just trust your instincts. Something's wrong. Another issue here is the website itself. It goes without saying, of course, 30 years after the internet became widely available, most commerce nowadays is done on the internet. It's done over e-commerce. Most of it is. And we all have developed skills by now to look at websites. But let's say a website seems a little bit odd. Well, call an IT professional and look at it. Once again, in my case, like I said, I was familiar enough with this website to take my own guess as to what was going on. But even if you're not, it's worth it to spend a couple $100 to talk to an IT professional and get their opinion on it. Does it seem right? Are there issues? Any decent IT professional would look at a website and say, there's something wrong with this. And by the way, I forgot to mention, I did have my own IT professional look at the website and he came back saying, oh, no, 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 no. So once again, my instincts were on guard there. Next, once you get a check, you know, you might want to talk to a bank. Now, keep in mind, your own bank may very well be fooled by these checks. So just talking to your banking representative may not have all the answers, but it never hurts to get a second opinion. If somebody is willing to send you a check in the mail with that much money on it, you might want to, or even not that much money, but something other than usual, you might want to have a third party look at it. As I said, the bank may not have all the answers. They may be fooled by it as well, but it never hurts just to ask. Supposedly, banks are more familiar with this. I say supposedly because sometimes they're not. But even so, most major banks will have a fraud department that knows what to look for. So it's worth looking into it. So we're going to bring this episode to a close. I hope everybody enjoyed it. I wanted to bring this episode out again. First of all, this happened to me in the past 2 weeks, and I thought it was interesting enough to post again on my podcast as to what happened. Second, just to let you know, this stuff happens to everybody, even fraud professionals like myself. We're targets just like anybody else. And had I fallen for it, yes, it would have been very embarrassing, not to mention costly. But, you know, everybody's a target nowadays. And unfortunately, you cannot be too careful. So just use some of these ideas. And of course, shameless plug, if you ever have any questions, somebody's always welcome to call. My listeners are always welcome to call me, and I'll see if I can't help as well. Anyway, I hope everybody's enjoying their summer. And it's June 11th here in Houston, Texas. Summer is starting, which means our temperatures are going through the roof, as always. But hey, I wouldn't live anywhere else. Everybody have a great summer. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.